Welcome to the REF SCAD podcast, where we explore the intersection of faith and creativity. Martin, campus minister with REF SCAD. And this month, we're taking a departure. We're doing something different because sitting across from me is not a SCAD student, but is REF SCAD intern Claire Knudsen. Claire, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm supposed to be the one asking the questions here. So if you've been around RUF any period of time, you know that Claire has been on staff for the past 2.5 years, and we are sad to say that her time as an intern at SCAD is coming to a close in 1 month.
Yeah,
1 month today, right? December 1st, we're recording this. So coming to a close. So we figured it would be only fitting to get Claire on the show, on the podcast, before she was done. So Claire, we are so glad that you're here.
I am tolerating this experience.
Scale of 1 to 10. 10 is like, I can't think of anything more fun. And 1 is like, I would have never come to Savannah if I had known I was going to have to do this. Where would you rank it?
3.5.
Dang, that's lower than I thought. That's pretty bad. Ugh, okay. The goal is to get it to like a 4.5 by the end. All right. So, Claire, my first and most important question for you is, as a self-avowed food fan, which is correct, right?
Yes.
What is the best meal you've had since you've been in Savannah?
Ooh. Does it have to be a restaurant? Because it was it at can your be house.
Claire, that's the nicest thing you've ever said. All right, no, it definitely doesn't have to be at a restaurant then.
It was Elizabeth's ribs that she smoked on the grill and her onion rings. I don't know if you actually made anything that night.
I don't even know if I was there.
No, you were there. It was the night I was the onion queen.
Oh, I helped fry the onions. That's right.
Yes.
Okay. I'll take some credit. I'm a little disappointed. I thought it was going to be something that I made.
I'm sorry.
But I'll give Elizabeth some credit, too. Dang. All right. So I'll take some credit for that. Mm-hmm. All right. So tell us, how did you end up doing the internship? How did that happen?
I had a lot of people recommend it to me, like my old campus minister and my old intern. And I knew that I wanted to go into counseling eventually, but I wasn't totally sure what that would look like or where I would go for graduate school. And the internship felt like a good, like, middle step to doing that. Not that what I have been doing is proper counseling or anything like that, but I have gotten to spend time individually with people for 2.5 years, talking about like what's important to them. And that's been really cool. And not even to mention, I just felt called to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm actually curious, you know, you're talking about obviously going into counseling and how a lot of what you've been doing in the internship isn't the same thing, but it's also not totally removed. And I feel like for a lot of people, the idea that those might even be in the same sentence, like, is a little confusing. So, like, what would be the overlap? Like, what is it that you've been doing in the internship that feels kind of similar to counseling? And then where is counseling different than what you've been doing?
Give me one of those questions at a time.
Yes. All right. So, like, what would be the overlap between counseling and what you've been doing the past 2.5 years with RUF?
Well, even just on a very practical level, like spending time with the same person over long periods of time, you like get to know them and you get to talk about, like I said before, things that are important to them, what they believe, what they're afraid of, what they feel like keeps them from their fullest potential, mm-hmm. Whether that is spiritual or emotional or physical or relational, So I would say in that regard, it's very similar, because that's sort of what counseling is too, just with a more clinical approach, in a much more professional setting.
Yeah. One of the things I think over the last 2.5 years that we have butted heads on in a very endearing way is like the nature of creativity, because I feel like for a long time you have said like what what I'm gonna go do is not like creative. Like that's actually why you said you didn't really want to be on the podcast. It's like there's this big chasm between like creativity and sort of where you see yourself. And part of like what we've tried to do in the podcast is push back on that notion a little bit. So I sort of want to talk about that a little bit, like what makes counseling something that we would even put in the category of creative. I suspect what you don't do when you sit down with somebody is like go through a checklist, right? It's not just a formulaic thing. So I want to hear you talk a little bit about that, like the creativity of what it means to like sit down with somebody and like work through their story and how not just everybody can do that. Like, what do you think are, you know, factors or characteristics of somebody like who's able to do that well?
Definitely a willingness to listen more than you talk. I have definitely been friends with people before who were a little bit older than me and kind of saw themselves as mentors and spent the majority of the time talking instead of listening. Like, even if they asked me questions and I started to answer, they would cut me off and then proceed to talk for 10 minutes.
Nice.
About things that I sort of already knew. So, yeah, definitely listening. And I feel like that also requires a certain level of humility and understanding that not everyone thinks the same way that you do. So even if someone wants to talk to you about something they're experiencing and it's similar to something that you have gone through, it's not wise to assume that they are feeling all the same feelings that you have felt in that similar situation or entering it with the same assumptions. And when you do kind of like, I hate to say detach, but like detach your experience from their experience, you get to learn a lot about not just them as a person, but like people as a whole and how everyone can be so different, even though we all have the same basic like needs and desires.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's what I love about that answer. Just as you were explaining that, I feel like you almost just as easily could have asked a question about any sort of like film or music or like a painting and given a very similar explanation, because like the two things you're talking about is essentially negative space, knowing when to pull back and observe and listen and when not to interject when it feels like that's our knee-jerk response.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other one is like good storytelling encapsulates two things. It encapsulates a particular experience, but it also is willing to consider what somebody else's experience might be. And both of those have to be true. Like it's specific enough to mean something, but also general enough for somebody else to be able to put themselves in somebody's shoes. And those are like the two things that you just went to with what makes like a good counselor, or even like we could say a good pastor. So to me, there's a lot of creativity in that. Like mm-hmm. we want to blur those lines a little bit, I think. How did you decide that you wanted to go the route of counseling?
Well, my sister is a counselor, so I was sort of familiar with the profession. And when I got to college, I thought I wanted to do graphic design or something like that. So I went to UGA and entered like the art school and spent my whole first year there. But by the end of that year, I realized that I hated art school.
Irony.
For so many reasons. And I just knew, like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not going to be content unless I'm actively helping people. Not that you can't help people with a creative career. I just didn't feel like it was what I was supposed to do. Or with a creative career in that classic definition.
Sure.
So I switched my major to psychology starting sophomore year. Minoring in human development, and I was so much happier, even though they were all like academic classes.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, as soon as I got there, I knew like this is exactly what I want to spend the rest of my life studying. Like, people are an endless source of fascination. And yeah, that's kind of how I got there. And then being here and doing the internship has helped me see even more and more that this is what I want to do. And it's been really cool to have a lot of students trust me with sensitive information about themselves and like things that are really special to them, or unique to their experience. What I am excited about going to school for is gaining the proper tools to actually help someone through difficult experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there particulars about the internship that you feel like have been solidifying or confirming in that way?
I think spending time with students and having them be like really kind and tell me like what I have meant to them for the past 2 years has been really affirming. Again, it always feels wrong to like talk well of yourself. but to hear someone tell me like that I have like a gracious presence, it's like one of the nicest compliments I've ever received in my life. or somebody else told me like that I'm a really excellent listener. So to like have real people who've known me for 2 years tell me those things obviously holds a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And tells me, okay, like maybe I am capable of doing this, mm-hmm. and like God made me to do this.
Yeah. So if we're going to do the thing that we talk about on the podcast of intersecting faith and creativity, I guess it's a fair question to ask the same of like psychology and counseling. Because I think for a lot of people, either those occupy such different fields that they're so far removed that the idea that somebody would even entertain, you know, 2.5 years of ministry and then counseling just feels remote. Or maybe on the other hand, people might say, like, doesn't that kind of just feel like the same thing that like a pastor might do if you're just talking about like counseling somebody? So like, how would you see the overlap of those two things? Like of, if we're talking about going to grad school, and studying psychology and counseling, but then also still as a committed Christian who's been working in ministry. What does that intersection for you look like?
I don't know if this answers your question, but if we are born into a broken world where everything is touched by sin, and God's whole plan for all of history is redemptive in its arc, it seems like a spiritual calling when it comes to counseling. If the goal is to bring greater, I don't know if like harmony or peace are the right words, but basically to bring like wholeness to someone's life, I don't understand why it's hard to see that as a spiritual calling.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, we talk about the fall and the effect that the fall had, all the way back to the beginning of the story of scripture. And we tend to put it in two categories, that there's, you know, the curse of condemnation, for Adam and Eve, but also a curse of corruption on the creation. And both of those things were true. And I suspect frequently when we think about counseling, we focus very much on the first aspect, which we should, of sin's role in condemnation and helping people work that out. But sometimes I wonder if we neglect that second part where corruption has been brought into the world, and we feel its effects on our lives too. I mean, that's like what sickness is, right? That's an effect of the fall. And if we're going to entertain that idea of like people can get sick and we need people to understand how sickness works, it seems at least worthwhile to pursue that as it relates to like people's emotional well-being. I guess in some sense, like what we're saying is it's not really a false dichotomy.
Yeah.
That if someone's actually going to do the work of restoration that God's equipped us to do, it entails both taking care of the condemnation and the way people are contributing to sin themselves, but also the way sin is at work against us. For sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So tell us, like, what a grad program in counseling would look like. Like, what does that entail?
Obviously, it depends on where you go. Since I'm not going to a seminary or a Christian college, I'm not going to get any sort of... like, the approach is not going to be a strictly biblical approach, which is kind of what I wanted. So in my program, it'll entail, I mean, normal graduate school classes, but also a lot of actual practice and a lot of role-playing with classmates, which sounds really weird. But it's like you would get that in any grad counseling program because you, like, actually have to practice for the professors to know, like, you're understanding anything. And, like, as a counselor, you never know who or what's going to walk in your door. And so to, like, actually practice with other people, like, first-year classmates, and then to do a practicum and then an internship where you're also getting supervision, you're starting to work in the real world and actually prepare for any scenario that comes at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds incredibly intensive.
Yes. My sister told me she had a friend who got her master's at, I think it was Virginia Tech, and they had a room where, like, the graduate student would be counseling a volunteer, and there was a phone in the room, and the professor could call the phone, the graduate student would have to pick up, and the professor would tell them everything they're doing wrong, and then they'd have to put the phone down and fix it.
Dang, I think I would quit that day.
Yeah.
That's awful. I mean, helpful, but, like, ugh.
Yeah, but, I mean, as a counselor, you hold so much power in people's minds, for the most part, for your clients. You, like, really have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What are you most apprehensive about?
In terms of
just the whole school, yeah, the whole school process.
I guess just it being really hard. I don't know. This is going to sound really arrogant, but, like, school has just never been that hard for me. And I've only run into, like, a handful of classes that were actually difficult. And so the idea of graduate school in my brain is that they're just trying to, like, kill you. But hopefully
seems
not.
Seems pretty bad for job placement, though, if everyone's dead.
I know. You know, just fear of failure.
Yeah.
Always.
The usual.
the usual.
Understandable. You know, one of the things I suspect is true over the past 2.5 years is you know a lot about everybody in RUF. And I'm sure we know a fair amount about you, but I'm sure there's still a lot of your story that some of us don't know. So now is the time on your parting month where we get to hear a little more about your story, which I know you're excited about. So tell us a little bit about just, like, your growing up, like, in the, did you grow up in the church, like, your story of faith, or if there's a pivotal moment, or what that's looked like for you?
I definitely grew up in the church. I grew up in a Baptist church in Athens and also went to that church's school, Christian private school, my entire life. And I definitely didn't hate going there when I was younger. I know a lot of people who look back and they hate it or just have had terrible experiences at private Christian schools. And it definitely had its problems, but, it, like, God definitely used it to, you know, help me know him. I'm definitely grateful for the Bible classes I was forced to take every single year growing up, because it definitely gave me a lot of knowledge about at least what's in the Bible. And it was my 10th grade Bible teacher who, like, God used to kind of actually make me think about what I believed. Because, funnily enough, he started teaching us about predestination. And that was terrifying. Because it's not, that is not something that Baptists believe in. And he, yeah, it like riled the whole class up. And he was like, okay, pull out your Bibles and prove me wrong. So yeah, we spent like multiple class periods just flipping through the Bible trying to prove him wrong. And every single time he was like, okay, but what about this? And it was only the Presbyterian kids in the room who were like, y'all, this is fine. But it was around that time that I started to think like, well, predestination doesn't really make sense because, like, what if I want God, but God doesn't want me? And I didn't really know what to do with that. And I had always been an anxious person, though I wouldn't have known to call it anxiety at that time. And my anxiety definitely found a home in that spiritual angst. But I had started going to youth group with a friend at that Baptist church that I grew up in because I was trying to figure things out. But as I was going there, I like didn't love it. It was pretty cliquish, but I was just trying to figure out what felt like the puzzle of Christianity. And I didn't really feel like I could believe it until I understood all of it in its entirety. if that makes any sense. But that friend convinced me to go to, this, like, I like roll my eyes now, it's giant youth conference called The Mix.
Man, that's so wonderful.
I know. And it was fine. It was definitely, I've been in the PCA for so long, it feels so foreign now to think about this place.
That makes sense.
Because yeah, it was loud music, flashing lights, like everybody put your hands in the air,
man,
and just feel God.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
But it was at that conference that the speaker, I felt like, actually explained the gospel simply. for the first time in my life, because the preacher at that church I'd grown up in was always like, you need a relationship with God, you need a relationship with God, but never explained what that meant or how that happened. Yeah. And this guy explained, like, this is what that means, and this is how it happens, and it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to not have everything figured out before you, like, know this. And there was just this moment where I didn't, like, make a decision and I didn't change my mind or understand something intellectually that changed me. It was literally like God opened my eyes and it was, like, instantaneous that I knew he was real and I knew that he loved me and that he died for me. And that was it. Yeah. And my anxiety, which had been, like, part of my life and crippling at so many different points, it literally, like, vanished in that second. Mm. And not that it has never come back, because it definitely is back. But I felt utter peace for the first time in my entire existence. And, I mean, it's the cheesy, like, Christian line, but, like, I haven't been the same since then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was maybe like a couple weeks after that that I was like, okay, I know something's different, but I have no idea what happened. And I spent basically like the next 2 years after that figuring out like, what does it actually mean to be a Christian and to know God? And like, is it okay to doubt? And what does predestination actually mean? But like, I didn't have to figure out all of those things before I knew him.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the, I mean, that's what Presbyterian circles were so helpful for me with, was understanding what had happened to me.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny. I feel like a lot of times predestination is one of those things that, like, we either kind of feel like we have to own, or we recognize that it's going to be a big stumbling block for a lot of people, or raise a lot of questions. And, like, a lot of those questions are fair and valid, but there's something really beautiful about that doctrine being transformative for you to be able to look at who God is in light of that and say, even my belief is a work from Him. And that's something that you are able to rest in, like that was in some ways like the groundwork for the gospel to make sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not actually something that I can do. Mm-hmm. And even my responding, I mean, like, your language too is super appropriate. It's like He opened my eyes, you know, like He was doing a work in me that even superseded like my ability to choose, even if I wanted to. There's something really beautiful about that doctrine being less abstract and actually a part of someone's story of how God's working in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. So then you ended up at UGA.
Yes.
So I suspect that UGA and SCAD are just a little bit different. Is that fair?
Yes.
What would you say is the biggest difference?
Social life.
All right, keep going. What do you mean?
I don't want to upset anybody.
Well, too late for that.
But to put it very reductively, if that's a word, UGA students are doing things all of the time, and SCAD students do like two things a week.
Man, shots fired. But only because it's true.
Yeah.
Did that feel like a culture shock then?
I guess so. Well, the bigger culture shock was like the first day I was ever on campus with students, and it was their first day of classes, and we were at the Hive, so I'm assuming most of them were freshmen, but everyone was dressed so, like, interestingly.
I think I remember you saying that. I think I remember you saying that exact sentence. Everyone is dressed so interestingly.
I've definitely told you this before, but I, like, looked around and for the first time ever was like, I am not cooler than most of these people here. Dang.
It's a good way to start.
Tells you
a
lot about what I think about myself.
It tells us what you thought about yourself for like 22 years and then what you
and
think
about
yourself.
And
then
I got here and
now.
I was like, oh my gosh, what am I even looking at? Dang. Yeah.
It's probably good to be humbled your first day, though, I guess, right?
It's like, okay, good thing I have blue hair.
Yeah. See, the difference was I already knew I wasn't that cool, so I didn't have to do the awakening when I got here.
Yeah. I was super intimidated.
By
Not
students.
Anymore. Yeah.
What changed for you to be less intimidated?
It's like, oh, they're all just 18.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
No offense.
Well, shots fired. It's okay, though. It's funny. You were talking earlier about how much you like realized you hated art school, and then you ended up at one for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Has your conception of an art school changed having been here, like for better or worse?
I've actually not thought about that.
Oh, well, now's a good time to.
Has it changed? Maybe it's changed for the worse, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've only been exposed to SCAD and then UGA's art school. And, I mean, SCAD is just so intense. Mm-hmm. Way more intense than the art classes that I were in. I was in. spent too long in art school.
Yeah. Well, they don't teach a grammar, do they?
No. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely impressive to see SCAD's resources and the opportunities that they provide. But I can definitely relate to just how much art classes, like, eat your time.
Yeah.
'Cause, I mean, I just, you know, complained about SCAD students doing only two things a week. But when I was in art school my freshman year, I was staying up so late all the time. I, like, couldn't hang out with people a ton because it just took so much time to get things done. It's not like studying for a test. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
It was, like, the same, but just, like, more intense.
Yeah, it was affirming. And yeah. in that way, I was like, oh, all the things I thought I didn't like actually are might still have true. Been warranted. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And I definitely know, like, I just would not have wanted to go to SCAD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless I was, like, an art history major. I feel like that would be manageable. I don't know.
What would you say has been your favorite part of your time on staff?
Favorite part? Wait, reword the question.
Yeah, what's been your favorite part of just working for RUF for the past 2.5 years?
That's a hard question. Because I like a lot of things about working for RUF.
Fine, you can pick two.
Oh, why does that make it harder?
All right, fine, you can only pick one.
I think I just like RUF as an organization. I mean, I liked it when I was a student at UGA, obviously, because I chose to work for it. But now having worked for it for 2.5 years, I, like, know that I'm really going to miss working for it. because, well, one, they just really take care of you. Like the intern department really cares about the interns. I assume there are people who care about the campus ministers.
That's accurate on the record.
And that trickles down all the way to, like, the campus ministers really care about the students and, like, the interns, and, like, I really care about the students. I'm not just here because, like, I get paid a lot of money and I am a Jesus freak. Like, I have been here because I felt called to this, and, like, not to be cheesy, but, like, what's more important than, you know, spending time with God and, like, in fellowship with other people and showing them the love of Christ.
Yeah.
Not to diminish anyone else's profession, but, like, it's just been really cool to be able to do that as my job for 2.5 years.
Yeah, that's fair. That's well put.
Yeah.
I know you hate abstract questions, so I'll make one a little less abstract. But how do you feel like, I mean, one of the things we talk about a lot is, like, we're constantly ministering to people, and it can feel like ministry is, like, the end goal and the gospel is a means to the end of ministry. But how do you feel like your time ministering to people for 2.5 years has shaped your faith?
Yeah, I don't like big abstract questions. I think, and I know I've said this before, but I haven't said it into this microphone. It's definitely helped me realize that God doesn't need me to do anything in order for him to accomplish what he's going to accomplish. Which kind of makes it sound like, well, why was I here in the first place? But I know I was here in the first place. But in, like you said, in this job, it can be hard not to feel like your job is your faith. Mm-hmm. And so if I feel like I'm doing badly at my job, then I feel like I'm doing badly at my faith.
Yeah.
But over time, I think, like, God has kind of worked that out of me. And I've already always felt like God is waiting on me to do something before he feels okay about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this job has definitely shown me, like, God doesn't need anything from me to, like, earn his love.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need anything from me to do his work in other people's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said. That resonates a lot. What are you going to miss most about Savannah?
Mm. other than people, Auspicious Baking Company.
what's your go-to at Auspicious?
Ham and cheese croissant.
I need to get a sponsorship.
Yeah.
Dang.
Ham and cheese croissant, pretty much any of the scones, and the focaccia.
In that order, or all at the same time?
All at the same time, if possible.
We can arrange it. I'm glad that people rank above the pastries, though.
Yes.
What is the thing that you are not going to miss most about Savannah?
The weather.
That's a cop-out answer, but it's also a true one.
I can come up with something else.
All right, do another one. What's another one?
Maybe I can't come up with
it. You can't say it.
No. Both. But definitely also how expensive everything is and how mediocre the restaurants are in general.
That one hurt.
I'm sorry.
It hurt because it's true.
Yeah.
If we go down that trail, we may not come back. We can just collectively lament. How would we describe this without sounding pretentious? How would you describe it?
We describe
an overinflated sense of food identity for a city.
I think that summed it up pretty well.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So since this is your last month and you will have no more opportunities, you get to ask the last question on the podcast, unprecedentedly. I've never been asked a question on the podcast. But you get one question. You can ask any question.
Does it have to be deep?
It can be whatever you want it to be.
And intellectual?
It can be whatever you want it to be.
What kind of vegetable are you?
Let me think. Oh, I know this one. And you're going to laugh when I say it. A Brussels sprout.
That's perfect.
And you can probably answer
it. It says everything about you.
Yeah. Explain why you think I said Brussels sprout.
It's not an intellectual thing. It's a gut instinct.
Oh. Mine was both. It wasn't really good. I do like Brussels sprouts, though. But I can tell you why.
I'm ready.
Well, I feel like Brussels sprouts get a bad rap. And I feel like they had this reputation for, like, being a little bit misunderstood, you know? But if you can prepare a Brussels sprout correctly, everybody actually likes Brussels sprouts. It just necessitates the right context.
I feel like there's so much to unpack.
Go ahead.
In that statement.
Go ahead.
About yourself. I don't know if you actually want to do this.
Go on, go for it. You already started.
You want more questions?
Oh, sure, you can ask another question.
Oh, I don't know.
I thought you were talking about Brussels sprouts.
No, I was talking about you.
Keep going. I thought you had something else.
No.
Parting words, Claire, what would you like to leave everybody with on your last universal address as a staff member of RUF at SCAD?
I don't know if I have anything. Because I'm panicking.
Well, that was surely anticlimactic. But perhaps oddly appropriate. You have one last chance.
You didn't tell me you were going to do that.
That was really good. That's a good answer.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. Well, Claire, thanks for joining us. And we're definitely going to miss you. But what that means is you have to come back to Savannah a lot to hang out with all of us.
For the right price.
Like $2.50. $2.50.
We'll haggle later.
We'll get you some Auspicious.
Yes.
Deal. Until next time. Thanks, Claire.